Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 13th of May, 2022. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of May have been edited by Sheila Shepherd and Sean Burrows. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are outrage as college moves Swan's Nest, Lib Dems strengthen grip on Winchester City Council, and new discovery at Hyde Abbey. So, may we have the first headline story, please, Heather?
Outrage as college moves Swan's Nest. Winchester College has sparked outrage among city residents after removing an aggressive swan's nest from a beauty spot less than 2 weeks before seven eggs were due to hatch. The college has said it had moved the nest following a series of attacks on students and dog walkers, which have caused anxiety among members of the public. However, nature enthusiasts have accused the college of acting immorally and within its own interests, after reports suggested the eggs had been oiled or waxed to stop them hatching. This week, Swan Support, the charity which removed the two swans from the stretch of the Itchen navigation near Wharf Hill on behalf of the college, said while it didn't agree with the decision, it was acting in accordance with a licence issued by Natural England. Wendy Herman, Operations Director, said, "We agreed to take on the removal of the swans as we felt it vital to do so as soon as possible in a professional manner, particularly since the female was sitting on eggs which she claimed that were no longer viable." People were first alerted to the swans' disappearance on Tuesday after a sign appeared by the stretch of the Itchen navigation near Wharf Hill where the two swans had been incubating their unhatched cygnets. The sign said, "Professionals had moved the swans and their nest to an approved alternative habitat under licence from Natural England following expert advice." However, residents have since raised their concerns for the bird's safety, with many left questioning where the nest has been relocated. The contentious spot, which is owned by the college, is also home to the rowing club's boathouse. Last year, riverkeeper Mark Sankey put up warning notices on Domham Road and the gates within the nature reserve to warn passers-by of aggressive behaviour from the male swan following several reported incidents from both students and members of the public. However, Esme Holding, a retired specialist nurse, insisted the swan's behaviour had been provoked by college students and staff and it was only acting to defend its nest. She said, "I think the college is acting immorally. It's shocking. The whole nest has gone. The eggs were halfway through their incubation. They were due to hatch in another week and a half. The swan is only defensive when his hen is on the nest. The college says the swan is being aggressive to the public. They put up notices last year saying there was a dangerous swan, when actually he wasn't. He only gets aggressive when the nest is approached and is just doing what a swan does. The nest is on college land. They could have simply closed the footpath. The boys at the boathouse could carry their boats further downstream. The boys go past the nest with their paddles. The swans will go to the boathouse and wait for the boats and try to bite their oars, saying, 'Go away, this is where my babies are.' He's not vicious. He's just defending his nest and things are much worse when the college boys come back. Miss Holding of Parchment Street said she had previously reported multiple incidents to the college's headmaster and David Barber, the Queen's Swan marker, including one in June last year when she says she witnessed a college don taunting the cob with a bike. The college responded at the time to say it was investigating the matter, but it wasn't aware of any aggression towards the swans. Scores of fellow Winchester residents shared their outrage on social media after hearing the swans had been moved from the canal. Julian Heathcote said, "It makes me really sad. We just bulldoze everything for our convenience. Swans in a nature reserve getting booted out for the benefit of humans. Some irony." Mike Sagar added, "This same pair nested in exactly the same place last year and successfully raised 6 cygnets. The college notice posted claimed it was necessary because some walkers had claimed anxiety from the aggressive nature of the swans. In my view, the nervous, anxiety-ridden walkers should have taken heed of the warning signs and used one of the alternative routes. It's more likely that the college wants to get their boats out." According to the Environmental Protection Act, it is illegal to intentionally take, damage or destroy a wild bird's nest while it's being used or built. It is also against the law to possess, control or transport live or dead wild birds or parts of them or their eggs. However, under certain circumstances, landowners can apply for a specialist licence to circumvent the rules. Keith Betton, County Recorder and Chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said swan eggs can be moved safely during incubation as long as they are kept warm. However, he said it's sad the college has taken the decision to move the nest. He said it's very sad that people are viewing swans as a problem. Swans are part of the natural habitat, and they've been here for far longer than we have. Certainly if they were on my land, I'd be doing my best to divert the public rather than move the swans to keep them safe. Winchester College has said it will do all it can to support wildlife on its land and has apologised to members of the public who have been concerned about the swans' behaviour and welfare. Natural England, the RSPB and Hampshire Wildlife Trust have been approached for comment, and there will be more about the swans in the letters column.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, Lib Dems strengthen grip on Winchester City Council. The Liberal Democrats strengthened their grip on Winchester City Council as the Greens made a historic breakthrough. Of the 15 wards up for contention, the Lib Dems retained all 8 of the seats they held heading into the polls, extending their majority in each. The Greens won in central Meon Valley. The Lib Dems made a gain with Mark Reach winning St Michael, left vacant by the death of Linda Murphy in December. James Batho and Anne Small were also welcomed as they secured St Barnabas and Whiteley and Shedfield respectively. In what was the biggest shock of the afternoon, Malcolm Wallace became the first ever Green to win a seat on the City Council, trumping Linda Gemmell in by 752 votes to compound a difficult afternoon for the Tories. The Conservatives, however, did welcome Neil Bolton to Upper Meon Valley, a seat they previously held, and retained all 4 of the other wards up for election. At the start of the afternoon, the makeup of the council was 26 Liberal Democrats, 16 Conservatives, 2 Independents and 1 vacant seat. The result means that there are now 27 Liberal Democrat, 15 Conservatives, 2 Independents and 1 Green. The leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said, "Today has gone really, really well, and I'm delighted to say we've come out of it having gained a seat. I think it's been a terrific result for us. We've all been returned with increased majorities, which was really beyond our expectations." Councillor Thompson personally congratulated Councillor Wallace. "Be very good to get to know the new Green councillor," she said. "I think it just shows our residents really want us to do more on the environment, and I'm sure with the new Green councillor, he will be pushing us to do all we can to up our recycling rate and improve air quality in the city centre." Leader of the Winchester Conservatives, Councillor Caroline Horbrill, said, "I'm so pleased to have all our city councillors back. We've had some really great results with returning councillors. And of course, we welcome Councillor Bolton to Upper Meon Valley. We're very sad to have lost Councillor Gemmell, but that was our only loss today. And given the national situation, I think we feel really blessed that everyone who worked so hard succeeded. We now need to continue to work really hard for the residents of Winchester so they do know where there is an alternative way of doing things to that which the current administration advocates. We're willing to fight. Often the national picture overrides what we're doing, and the BBC and others have been talking constantly in the last few weeks about how this is a comment on national politics, even though we're voting for local councillors, and that seeps into everything." Councillor Horrell said, "It was great to be working with a new party on the council. I'm really sorry for Councillor Gemmell, who's been a long-standing councillor and worked tirelessly for her residents," she said. "I really hope she'll take stock and be back next year."
Let's have the third headline story, please.
And this is about the archaeological dig in Hyde, and it's called New Discovery at Hyde Abbey. Remains of the core of a medieval wall have been found just 80 centimetres below the garden of a house near Winchester in a major archaeological discovery. The excavation at Hyde Abbey, the burial place of Alfred the Great, also discovered a huge foundation for what is believed to be the north wall of a church. Most stonework from the abbey has been taken over time for reuse, hence the archaeological team was delighted that the trench revealed some intact stonework to the north and floor surfaces to the south. This is the first discovery of the church nave of Hyde's medieval abbey, according to the archaeologists. Dig organiser David Sperling said the nave of the huge church under the gardens of Hyde had never been found before, despite being the burial place of King Alfred. Over 80 metres long, it has remained hidden beneath the houses, gardens and roads in Hyde. The latest dig, known as Hyde 900, has now located the north wall for the first time, only some 80 centimetres below the garden of King Alfred, 6 King Alfred Place. Householders, Paul and Cap McCulloch, had already had their garden dug during the 2020 Hyde 900 community dig, but no remains of the abbey were found apart from demolition materials left over after the destruction of the abbey. However, that dig, and the subsequent dig in 2020 at four other gardens in the vicinity, indicated that the trench in No. 6 King Alfred Place missed the north wall of the nave by only 2 or 3 metres. Mr. Sperling said, "When we put together the new information from previous digs and had the results from the University of Winchester's ground-penetrating radar survey done by David Ashby, we talked it over with Paul and Kat, who jumped at the offer that we could once again dig the garden, but to avoid Kat's peony." Consequently, Hyde 900 organised a limited-scale single-trench dig to be staffed by some of our experienced volunteers, as it was expected that any remains would be at least 1.5 metres below the grass. As ever, Professor Martin Biddle took a keen interest in the plans and visited the dig at an early stage, being in Winchester for the launch of a further volume of the Winchester Excavation series. After an early find of a Morris Minor bumper and plenty of demolition rubble left over from the Bridewell, the prison built in 1793 over the site of the church, the team were delighted to see the remains of the core of a medieval wall, amazingly only 80 centimetres below ground level. Professor Biddle expressed his pleasure at the results and said, "What a tremendous amount of new and important information from one trench. It's really vital addition to what we know about this important abbey." The McCullochs were also delighted at the discovery. "This dig has achieved results far beyond our expectation. To find intact stonework from the 12th century abbey is rare. The excavation now confirms the exact location of the abbey nave. In addition, the find of a rare sculptured beakhead, perhaps representing a mythical beast such as a griffin, was a bonus. It is more likely to be a fragment of a voussoir, the wedge-shaped stone which is part of the arch, forming one of the orders of the arch over the doorway of the church. And this is accompanied by three excellent photos. One is the discovery in the garden, avoiding the peonies, but showing the floor layer of the church, a rectangular dig, and the floor is at the bottom, and, as they keep saying, only 80 centimetres below is the indication of a wall. And then in the garden, a group of local people all having a look at the bits which have been found, and a little girl particularly fascinated by the beakhead, which is not surprising because there's a photograph of the beakhead, which is a sort of chalky colour, but it definitely is beak-shaped, exactly as you might imagine from an ancient large bird.
Thank you, Jane. And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, editorial comment, first person and Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Ashley, Elizabeth Ashley, peacefully at the Maypole Nursing Home. Court, Molly, nay Orwell Court, suddenly at home, aged 86. Edie, Richard Edie, suddenly aged 61. Fitzsimmons, Ian Clifford Fitzsimmons, late of Itchen Abbas, aged 79. Gordon, Hazel Gordon, aged 94. King, Gordon Richard King, peacefully at the Winchester Hospice. Kingshot, Mary Kingshot, peacefully aged 84. Lord, Susan Emma Nay Cox Lord, aged 47. McCoo, Stella Kathleen McCoo, peacefully at home. Padwick, Stanley Jack Padwick, aged 84. And Woodfield, Pat Woodfield, peacefully after a short illness, aged 93. Now Heather's going to read us Christian comment.
Written this week by Liz Tatum, and headed Hearing the Voice of God. Last Sunday in my church tradition was Good Shepherd Sunday. It is the day of the year when we think about Jesus referring to himself as the shepherd who will gather us up and who will go out and look for us when we are lost. It's the time to remember to listen to his voice and see what he calls us to. Our priest tried an experiment at the Sunday service. The children sat on the floor facing him and with their backs to the people. Some parents had been given scripture lines to read out loud, such as, "I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep," John 10:11, and, "My sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me," John 10:27. He asked each time whose the voice was, and of course the reader's children said, "That's my mummy," or "That's my daddy." And the point was that the familiarity of a voice means we know it, even if we can't see the person, and even after many years. I once asked a friend who knows about birds how the returning female penguins find their mates among the thousands of males who have been incubating their eggs on the Antarctic, and he told me that if I were in a huge crowd and my husband started calling me, I would find him, as his voice is familiar. It reminded me of my daughter once calling me from one end of a packed underground station to the other. I wasn't expecting her to chase after me because I'd dropped something into her handbag by mistake, but I still heard her above the noise of the crowd. How do we know when we hear the voice of God? Sometimes he speaks directly, and we hear his words in our senses, but usually he speaks to us through other people, and we know that what is being said is true because it has resonance. It feels right. My coming to write this column 5 years ago was a combination of both hearing his voice and someone speaking to me, all on the same weekend. Do not underestimate how you might be used to speak truth to someone, to be a channel of God's voice. If it feels right and is a kindness, then pass it on. You might change someone's life for the better. Likewise, listen for his voice in your prayer or quiet times and in the words of others. If you're not sure, then mull it over. Give it some time and see if it feels right. I think it takes some time for those penguins to find their mates among the crowd, but they always do. We do not know what the Good Shepherd is calling us to, but he is calling you and me to something that is part of his plan for us and for the world. Liz Tatum.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or one can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 10 letters this week, and Noel's going to start reading with the first one.
Yes, Nick Tout writes about waste collection. Excuse me. Read the story in last week's Chronicle about Itchen Valley councillor clearing rubbish. Why are individuals having to clear up long-standing mess? And worse, how can the recycling centres not have the gumption to accept the rubbish? The need to register to use the tip is crazy. No need for it. This bureaucracy encourages fly tipping. As a keen walker, there is more fly tipping in the last 5 years than ever before. How do you explain yourself, council? I used the bar end tip last week and it was empty of people, but some paid employee still ticked off my car registration. Really? Nick Tout, Cundleway, Kingsworthy.
And this letter returns to the Swans. College disrespect for wildlife, from Tristan de Quincey. The removal of the swan's nest from the River Itchen by Winchester College certainly did cause outrage. As the damage is done, the priority must be in guaranteeing this cannot happen again. However, their nest was moved, with whatever experts they used. That wild birds were the weakest link in the competition for river space seems wholly wrong. We have been wild swimming in the same section of the river. We fondly remember last year's cygnets spending lockdown with them in that space. When the swans defended their nest and got aggressive, we tried to understand and prioritise a creature in its habitat. I worry that the decision made by the college to resolve their conflict this way shows selfishness and a disrespect for the river's wildlife that they are entrusted with. It seems you can't move a bird's nest for your own benefit unless you are a large, wealthy institution. And that is a letter from Tristan de Quincey, Bar End Road, Winchester, and is accompanied by a beautiful photograph of last year's cygnets. In the same spot, there are Wharf Hill houses behind, luckily overlooking the site of the mother and father swan and five grey cygnets, fluffy cygnets with little black beaks, swimming around happily. And once the swans have had their cygnets, all they want is a bit of floating swan food.
And Daphne Deer also writes about the swans. I am appalled to have just read that Winchester College have removed two beautiful swans from Tunbridge Canal, Itchen Navigation, and have removed their six eggs from the nest. I believe it was at first thought that the swans and the six eggs were moved to a private site. We're now hearing that the eggs, which were due to hatch in 2 weeks' time, have been waxed so that they cannot hatch and the chicks will die. How dare Winchester College think they have the right to interfere and remove and kill off the wildlife on the canal? Unfortunately, it's too late for the chicks, who will be dead by now. The perpetrators should be dealt with severely and ordered to return the swans to their home at once. It would be a good thing if in future Winchester College stops meddling in things which don't concern them. Daphne Deer, Fairdown Close, Winchester.
And changing the subject, George Spencer writes about city plaudits. By now, the dust and the hangovers will have settled on Winchester City's fantastic playoff final win over Bristol Manor Farm, which attracted over 1,000 people to the Charters Community Stadium on Bank Holiday Monday, Chronicle May the 5th. The result is the result of years of hard work from Chairman Paul Murray, Elliot Trodd and Ken Raisbreck, as well as manager Craig Davis, who has had the club challenging for promotion since the end of his first full season, which has also seen a record equally FA Cup run in the autumn of 2018. Since missing out on fifth to Cinderford on the final day of the 2018-19 season, Winchester City have been fourth in the league at the conclusion of the last three seasons and have finally achieved their reward in the form of a place in the Southern Premier for next season. Hopefully, many of the locals who were newcomers there on Monday will start coming down regularly, as the prices are considerably lower than those at Southampton. You can take your pint outside and there's no VAR either. George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
And Melanie Hill writes, Ukraine praise. Well done to all the children and teenagers from Winchester Theatre Arts, along with their teachers and volunteer helpers on the night, who raised £2,452 for Ukraine by putting on a show, An Evening of Musicals. What a fantastic achievement. The young people put their talent to good use. Of particular note was the rendition of One Day More from Les Misérables, when the Ukrainian flag was waved during the song and the audience broke into spontaneous applause. It was a wonderful and moving, but also sent shivers down the spine. It was wonderful to see young people making such a positive contribution in such dark times. It gives me hope for the future. And that was from Melanie Hill, Kilmaston, Alsford.
Joining of minds. I have suggested many times, in the interest of Winchester's residents, that the two main parties, Conservative and Liberal Democrat, should sit down around a table and exchange straightforward pros and cons viewed from both sides. Both sides will have positive ideas in line with each other. There would be some form of consensus, and without trying to secure brownie points, a unified effort would serve Winchester's council tax-paying residents, and it would deliver results within a feasible timescale. I'm not suggesting a coalition, but a joining of minds regarding issues where Winchester's residents must come first. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Peter Rees writes about food poverty. On page 44 of the Chronicle, April 28th, you carried a very disturbing report about Hampshire children in poverty more likely to need free school meals than 5 years ago. These children don't have a vote, a voice, or the individual chance to determine the quality of their own upbringing in loving and caring households. 52% of Hampshire children are now eligible for free school meals. They will become the children who are less likely to get A to C grades in GCSE than their wealthier and better nourished peers. Nationally, 2.6 million children have much smaller meals than usual, skip meals regularly, and have no food available when they are hungry. Since 2010, the 4 million children born into poverty, determined when parents cannot afford basic food, clothing or shelter, since 2010 will become 5 million this year. These are children in households where choices about heating or eating are already being made, with 2 million adults going without food at least one day per week because they cannot afford to eat, feeding their children as best as possible. Excellent food banks address the symptoms, not the root cause of hunger and poverty. Amongst so many reasons why these facts are staggering is exactly what the article highlights. Universal credit will actually trigger an increase in the national uptake of free school meals, because the most needy families requiring essential support will not qualify under the new benefit regime. 52% in Hampshire will become soon 57%. Thousands of UK children will miss out and continue to live in food poverty. These children come from households where the effect of long-term multiple hardship, poverty and nutritional deficit is devastating. exacerbated by universal credit rules allegedly improving their lives. We hear almost nothing about government strategy to address this devastating and iniquitous state of affairs. Thankfully, whilst Hampshire free school meal provision will continue to provide for children caught in this deprivation trap, not of their own making, perhaps our government MP and civic chiefs would say something about exactly what their plans are to address this scandalous situation. That's Peter Rees, Health and Social Care Group, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And I think that's the end of our... Oh, no, it's not, is it? No. In that case, it's you, Jane. Sorry about that.
There is one more letter, and actually, you might want a pencil or a laptop out ready for this letter, which is from Professor Sir Brian Thwaites and is headed Talking Maths. I was delighted to read in your May the 5th issue Gertrude Walton's letter reminding me of a conversation which she and I had nearly 30 years ago about what she calls the relativity paradox. And I am much touched by her reference to the school mathematics project, which for some 25 years had such a profound effect on the teaching of mathematics in the nation's secondary schools. Sadly, I'm in no position now to take up the cudgels on her behalf, but being in my 99th year, I recently thought up the following little problem, which has 99 at its centre. Now, what is the next number in the following sequence? 63, 69, 71, 78, 83, 90, 99, 120, 143, 201, 243, 344, 1203. Your readers may care to have a go at this, and should Gertrude Walton send me the correct answer with its reasoning, I shall be pleased to send her a bottle of champagne for old time's sake. And that was from Professor Sir Brian Thwaites, Salt Hill Park, Fishbourne, West Sussex.
Mrs. Dollery writes, with reference to the 158-bed building at Winnell Manor and Winnell Valley Roads for students, I have had no notification or letter sent to me, and neither have my neighbours. I suppose this is another scheme that will be hidden from view until it is finished. The councillors continue to lie about building for students, as they did at the meeting we had for the 76 homes being built at the Winnell Flats on an industrial estate with the highest pollution area in Winnell, and a reduction in value of the people who have purchased their flats. I totally agree with Rose Burns that people living in Winnell are not given the priority they deserve. The whole estate is a disgrace and full of student accommodation and houses looking like slums. Is this how the City Council thinks people want to live? And more to the point, do they care? Hopefully Rose Burns gets her referral to the Planning Committee and those councillors can see the error of their ways and not make the same mistakes as they have done at Winnell Flats. Winnell Estate has become a dropout camp that this council has created. Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
And this is a letter from the said Gertrude Walton. Thank you for publishing my letter, A Physics Puzzle Chronicle, May the 5th. You are placing Winchester, England, on the map of history. This is more than physics. Mathematicians participating in the protest themselves, still blinded by an ambiguity, are lamenting the new irrational and obscurantist mental climate. But I want all those interested to share the fun, solving the relativity paradox. Although there is a war on in Ukraine, this is not frivolous. That I have solved it and am praised for it is useless until everybody can see what the error had been. No more than elementary school geometry is needed. Those interested need my email address, previously given as part of my address, sapere.aude@btinternet.com, in order not to be derailed by the gigantic literature about the supposed problem. Sapere aude from Horace means dare to think independently, don't let yourself be intimidated. And I'll read her email address again in case you want it. Is Sapere, that's S-A-P-E-R-E, dot Aude, A-U-D-E, at btinternet.com. That's Gertrude Walton, Hyde Street, Hyde, England, Winchester.
And yes, that was the very last letter. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. And now we go on to this week's first person, and it's by Kimberly Barber, and Jane's going to read it.
And she writes, Three Nasty Bugs. A few years ago, the most feared virus for families was chickenpox. It would be talked about in hushed tones. Who was missing from today's gathering? Was it chickenpox? Had we been in contact with them while they were infectious? Some brave parents would announce that they would be going to pox-ridden child's house in the hope of their little ones catching it and getting it out of the way. There were rumours of chickenpox parties. I was never that brave and terrified of the pox, and of being the social outcast for a couple of weeks. I would swerve the pox-ridden kids and then have waves of anxiety if we found out that we'd been near anyone with it. However, March 2020 came along and everything changed. There was a new virus on the block, and this time it was actually scary. We coped and swerved both chickenpox and COVID like a strong family battleship riding on the stormy seas. Then, when chickenpox reared its ugly head after my older boy had been gallivanting at a kids' holiday activity camp during February half term, the family ship was hit, but we carried on. My son popped out in spots and then proceeded to be abnormally quiet and very itchy and irritable for a week or so. His spots were everywhere. The worst were on his scalp under his thick head of hair. Then almost 2 weeks after the first spot had appeared, the spots arrived on my daughter. Unluckily for her, the worst part of her was under her nappy. The poor girl was driven nuts by the itching, and unlike explaining it to my poorly four-year-old, who kind of understood not to scratch, she was not so receptive to the idea of not scratching and taking it easy. So we pushed on through the next 10 days of more itching, scratching and general malaise. Still, on the bright side, it had cleared up in time for our trip to Butlin's at Easter. But having just got over chickenpox, the kids' immune systems were low, and if you read my last column, you will have no surprises to hear that a few days after coming home from Butlin's, we all tested positive for COVID. I had invited a friend and her kids round to play when I was struck by sneezing and fatigue. It was sunny, and I assumed it was hay fever and took a tablet. Then, while I was lying on my living room floor, my friend suggested that I didn't look right and that I should take a test. I whipped one out and took it, and the red line came straight up bold red. I've taken hundreds of those tests, and a small part of me doubted that they worked. It's irrational, so many people say that they work, but I think really until you've seen it and you don't really believe that it would happen to you. A bit like taking pregnancy tests. There's always a small doubt that this small piece of plastic could actually tell you some serious news. So the family battleship sailed through COVID. I was very ill for about 10 days, fever and fatigue and nausea coming and going in waves. The kids were ill for 3 days with temperatures and bad tummies. The ones who most likely brought this terrible virus into the house bounced out of it with no problem. Then, just as my red line faded, my other half tested positive, so we were back on lockdown, but with the roles reversed. Well, that was a few weeks ago now, and as I write, I'm afraid it's no better, as the weakened immune system has left us open to another nasty bug, and I am currently suffering from tonsillitis. This time the GP has given me antibiotics. I hope that this nasty trio of viruses is our lot for the summer. Like they say, things usually come in threes.
And it's time for the editorial comment, and it's over to Heather.
Sad clash between swans and college. What a strange and sad story, the controversy over the swans on the Itchen Navigation near Wharf Hill. Winchester College, the landowner, has removed the adult birds and prevented the eggs from hatching. The birds have been taken to a secret location. The male swan this year and last year has been getting aggressive with people approaching the nest and also attacking the college boys' boats. It is odd that this is a new issue. Birds and rowers have been coexisting on that stretch of water since the 19th century. One cannot help feeling the college has overreacted. The threat posed by a swan has been overstated. It is a bit of an urban myth that they can break your arm. Surely a more sensible way of dealing with this would have been to close the footpath that runs past their nest during the hatching season. There is no guarantee that the pair will not return at some future date. Or perhaps other swans will build a nest in the same place, and all the college would have achieved is a spectacular public relations own goal.
Noel's now going to read an alternative look at the news because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, and the item says, some history with your pint in pub garden. Drinkers will be able to follow the history, the story of Hyde Abbey in a local pub garden. The King Alfred has installed a series of information panels about the Hyde Abbey story, disposed of by Winchester City Council a decade ago, but rescued from a skip. They are now on display in the garden of the Hyde Pub on Saxon Road, near the site of the medieval monastery, the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. Meanwhile, the friends of Hyde Gate remain cross about the lack of progress in removing the pigeons from the abbey's former gatehouse in nearby King Alfred Place. And there's a big picture of a long brick wall with a stone bench beside of it and all those rescued posters which show the history of Hyde all in a row on the brick wall. So if you want to see them, you have to go to Hyde. You have to go to King Alfred the Great pub.
Lighting up time ends on Friday the 13th of May at 5:19 a.m. and begins at 8:45 p.m. And on Wednesday the 18th of May, it ends at 5:12 a.m. and begins at 8:53 p.m. We'll continue with further items of general news. And we'll start with one read by Jane.
And here we have, gardeners are urged to embrace a wilder lawn to enhance nature. Gardeners are embracing wilder lawns in a shift that is good news for plants and wildlife, Charity Plant Life said ahead of its annual No Mow May campaign. Plant Life is encouraging people to leave the lawnmower in the shed for May and to mow less and at different lengths and frequencies through the summer to create a mosaic of habitats that benefit wildflowers, bees and other insects. As part of its campaign, it encourages gardeners to take part in an Every Flower Counts citizen science survey in the last week of May to see what is growing in the nation's lawns. The survey allows people to see the difference they are making for nature through mowing less and encouraging pollen and nectar-rich wildlife in their lawn, providing them with their personal nectar score. The charity says the survey's results show a shift towards less mowing and wilder gardens, with 78.8% of the 2,157 participants choosing not to mow their lawns for a month before the survey last year, compared to 33.6% of those who took part in 2019. In 2021, those who did not mow their lawn in May reported more than 250 different plants among the grass, including wild strawberry, wild garlic, and rare species such as adder's tongue fern, meadow saxifrage, snake's head fritillary, and eyebright. There were even wild orchids, including species which have suffered significant decline, such as man and green-winged orchids, and southern and northern marsh orchids and bee orchids in lawns which had been left alone. People taking part in the survey recorded almost 100 species of pollinators in their lawns in 2021, including 25 types of moths and butterflies, 24 different bees, including the scarce moss carder bee. A typical lawn in the survey had 17 daisies on a 1 metre square patch, and a smattering of buttercups and dandelions, with Germander Speedwell and Field Forget-Me-Nots the next most likely plants to be seen. The flowers produce nectar and pollen for insects, with dandelion-rich lawns particularly wild-friendly, Plant Life said. Although dandelions are outnumbered 85-1 by daisies on the average lawn of people taking part in Every Flower Counts survey, they produce 9% of its pollen and 37% of its nectar sugar. Just 8 dandelions could produce enough nectar to meet an adult bumblebee's baseline energy needs, the charity said. Ian Dunn, chief executive of Plant Life, said, "These results demonstrate that our call to No Mow May has set seed and laid down deep roots. The results underline how embracing a little more wildness in our gardens can be a boon for plants, butterflies and bees. We are excited by the unfolding dawn of a new British lawn." Ollie Wilson, modeller for the National Plant Monitoring Scheme, a citizen science programme run by a number of organisations to monitor plant species across the UK, said, "May is a crucial month for flowering plants that need to get a firm foothold, but we are not advocating never mowing after May. Plant Life guidance across the year recommends a layered approach to the garden cut, where shorter grass is complemented by areas of longer grass. This two-tone approach boosts floral diversity and nectar and pollen production through the year. One way to encourage plants that like shorter grass, such as dove's foot cranesbill and self-heal, alongside flowers including cuckoo flower and meadow buttercup that prefer longer grass, is to create regularly mown desire paths," the charity said. Felicity Harris, head of participation for Plant Life, added, "Each year, the trend towards wilder lawns is growing from the grassroots up and is set to bloom as never before in 2022. It is not only plants and pollinators that benefit, we do too. Less mowing gives garden lovers more time to relax and reconnect with nature. Those hours previously spent mowing can be used to be spending time with others, building a wildlife pond or a bug hotel or a reptile refugium." And this is accompanied by 3 photos, a desire path through a meadow of beautiful different grasses and daisies and buttercups, with a path going through the middle. Then a little photograph of self-heal, a little purple flower called self-heal, with a lovely white-tailed bumblebee tucking into its contents. And a wilder lawn in Wiltshire with dandelions and forget-me-nots and fruit trees above it. And it's all very much to be encouraged, although it is quite hard work, she says.
Drinker's Wall being removed. This is about changes to King's Walk in Winchester. Demolition work has started on brick walls popular with drinkers, but a hotspot for antisocial behaviour outside the King's Walk arcade in Winchester city centre. Workmen moved in on Friday, May the 6th, and cordoned off the area to start the work, so there is a fence around the place that did have a pond and has trees in it. The brick wall next to South Down Social Cycle Cafe was only built a few years ago and was crenellated to make it uncomfortable for people to sit on. However, the wall did not deter antisocial behaviour, and so now it and its flower beds are being removed. A public notice on the fencing refers to work carried out at St Maurice's Covert in March and April. The City Council is undertaking work to revamp the 1970s King's Arcade before, in the long term, the building is set to be demolished as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill. Access to the King's Walk arcade of shops is not prevented by the works. City Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said the walls outside King's Walk were never intended to provide an informal seating area, and by demolishing them we are responding to the concerns of local businesses and shoppers affected by a small group of people who gather and sit on the walls during the day. The walls and associated flower beds will be replaced by fencing, which we hope will mitigate the day-to-day challenges for both traders and shoppers. We are also working closely with partner agencies to address the wider issue of antisocial behaviour across the district. Our vision for King's Walk is to create a new creative quarter for Winchester as our plans for central Winchester move forward. Removal of the existing walls is just the first step, and we're currently working with architects to design further significant improvements to the public realm. And these improvements will make it easier to navigate between different parts of the city centre, they say, and will also encourage street artists and performers to activate the reconfigured public spaces in ways which are both engaging and entertaining for all those visiting King's Walk.
Yes, and here's a brief item which follows on from that. It's headlined King's Walk Architects. Architects have been appointed to oversee the revamp of the King's Walk area in Winchester. London-based studio Multi, M-U-L-T-I, will oversee the temporary changes before the area is included in the forthcoming New Silver Hill or Central Winchester regeneration. The firm was due to meet tenants of King's Walk last week. The council envisages nurturing a creative artistic quarter and as such is evicting Suki Market and Sunflowers Emporium. A public launch of the next stages of the redevelopment will take place on March the 16th before the start of the formal procurement process on March the 17th.
And now a little article that will mean something to all our listeners. Charity holds first public meeting for 3 years. Winchester Talking Newspaper, WTN, which provides free sound recordings of the Hampshire Chronicle to its blind and visually impaired listeners, has held its 30th AGM, the first in its new premises. WTN's chairman, John Richards, said, "Since our AGM in 2019, we have moved premises twice, but are now settled comfortably in our new studio in Winnell Valley Road," which is, of course, where I am sitting at this moment. "We held our 30th AGM in Unit 12, Winnell Valley Road, at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, May the 8th. Visitors were invited to stay for afternoon tea and to see our new studio. The event was attended by one of WTN's special friends, Tom McInulty, who was accompanied by his guide dog, Toby. Tom was one of the senior regional managers for the Macular Society until his retirement in 2020. Tom lost his sight in 1983 and since then has dedicated himself to raising money for different charities for visually impaired people. He has been a trustee at Southampton's site for 28 years and helps them without sight loss and helps them without and helps them out with sight loss awareness training." And this is accompanied by a lovely photo of names you will recognise, Keith Vincent and Peter Lydiard, sitting at the table in the room next door here, smiling broadly because Tom McInulty is giving us the most delightful talk with his lovely dog Toby lying on the floor, having a bit of a breather.
Historic day as Greens secure first ever seat on City Council. And there's a very happy photograph of Malcolm Wallace wearing his green rosette and beaming at his success, and a group of supporters ranging from clearly retired gentlemen to a mother with a very, very young child in her arms, and they're all looking and feeling very triumphant. Historic milestone for Winchester Greens. The Green Party has secured its first ever seat on Winchester City Council. Malcolm Wallace dislodged Conservative councillor Linda Gemmell in central Meon Valley. The result means the ward now has one Green councillor, one Conservative and one Independent. Mr. Wallace is just the second Green to hold a seat on a Hampshire authority, following Blossom Gottlieb, who represents Horndean Downs on East Hampshire District Council. In the election last May, he received 33% of the total votes in the Central Meon Valley ward, up 19% from 2019, and has since built on that momentum to secure the ward at the second time of asking. Speaking after his victory, he said, "It's a great achievement to be the first Green elected to Winchester City Council. I'm excited, but also incredibly humbled. I'm very honoured to have been selected by the people of Meon Valley to represent them on the council. I think a lot of it is just about getting out there and talking to people about what Greens stand for. Fairness, community, the environment and the people and places we live in. These values are resonating with people all over the country, and after today, we'll have more Green councillors than ever before."
Fuel poverty hitting more households. Thousands of households in Winchester were in fuel poverty before the national energy crisis, new figures show. The End Fuel Poverty Coalition has warned many more will struggle to afford rocketing bills this year after the energy price cap rose in April and the war in Ukraine led to an increase in wholesale oil prices. Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy figures show 3,996 households in Winchester were in fuel poverty in 2020, the most recent official figures. This was up from 3,308 the year prior, meaning 7.9% of people lived in poverty with an energy efficiency rating of band D or below, and after heating their home had a residual income below the official poverty line. Across England, more than 3 million households, 13.2%, were in fuel poverty in 2020, the lowest proportion since records began in 2010. However, these figures do not account for the current explosion in fuel prices, which saw the energy price cap increase by 54% in April, meaning many households can expect to pay around £700 more per year on their bills. The annual limit on tariffs is due to rise again in October, and Michael Lewis, chief executive of energy company E.ON UK, warned MPs between 30 and 40% of people in Britain could end up in fuel poverty. He added that customers' debts could rise by 50%, or around £800 million. Simone Rossi, chief executive at EDF, also warned Parliament that the company had received 40% more calls from customers worried about debt. Simon Francis from the End Fuel Poverty Coalition said the 2020 figures show just how significant the government's failure to tackle fuel poverty has been, and estimated more than 6 million households in England have now been thrust into fuel poverty. He said the impact of measures taken pre-pandemic has barely shifted the dial, and we know very little has been done since 2020 to change the picture. We need urgent help for households in fuel poverty, now combined with a long-term plan to improve energy efficiency of our homes and a sustainable, renewable-led energy mix. Peter Smith, Director of Policy and Public Advocacy at National Energy Action, said the poorest households are all too often disproportionately impacted by poor housing, and urged the government to fulfil its £9.2 billion commitment to improving energy efficiency of homes, schools and hospitals. Improving energy efficiency should be at the forefront of the UK's response to the energy crisis. A government spokesperson said it is continuing to make significant progress on tackling fuel poverty. We are investing over £6.6 billion this Parliament and working directly with local authorities to further boost energy efficiency in homes across the UK.
Now a very happy article, Love is in the Air, Builder's Hot Air Balloon Proposal. Love really was in the air for a couple who shared a special moment above Winchester. for Aldo Lando had planned a surprise trip in a hot air balloon in order to pop the question to the love of his life, Paola Tunnus, while floating above the Hampshire countryside. And the special moment, which took place on April the 18th, was captured on camera by balloon pilot Jonathan Greatrix. Aldo said he was delighted that his girlfriend of 4 years said yes. Aldo, 33, said, "I was planning to propose to my other half in a nice private place. I wanted it something special for her because she is a special person to me. I was looking for an interesting idea to propose for more than a year, and then I thought it would be lovely to do that in a hot air balloon. By the way, my fiancé is afraid of heights, but she always wanted to try something like that, so I wanted to give it her first experience." However, the moment nearly didn't happen, as interior design student Paola, 28, was hit by last-minute nerves and almost didn't get into the balloon. After some gentle encouragement, she overcame her fear, much to Aldo's relief. He said, "Paola didn't know anything about it. I've been to Winchester once before and I loved it. I like Winchester because of its history and I thought it would be a perfect place. So I organised a trip for us and we went into the city centre before I took her to meet the hot air balloon. At first she was scared and she said she was not going in, but thankfully Jonathan's team put her at ease. It was also the first time in a hot air balloon for Aldo, and luckily the pair had perfect weather for their flight. It was also the first time Aldo had ever popped the question to anyone. Aldo, a structural engineer who runs his own construction company, said, "I was a little bit nervous about the trip and asking her. It's something I've never done before. When I took out the ring, I feared I would drop it. But everything went well. It was perfect up there. It was like a little slice of paradise." After the flight, the couple, who first met in Bond Street in London by chance and struck up a bond over their heritage as they are both Albanians who grew up in Greece, enjoyed a glass of champagne on the ground to celebrate. The couple, who live in Surbiton, have already booked a venue and set a date and will be tying the knot in July at the old Marylebone Town Hall. They hope to honeymoon in Croatia later in the summer. And this is accompanied by two photographs, one of the hot air balloon, a beautiful shade of blue against a very lucky blue sky, and then the balloon having landed on a hillside with Aldo and Paola, his arm closely round her, and Paola looking very happy after she's accepted his offer.
Man turns around his life after prison. And there's a photo of a smiling young man in one of those funny peaked caps and a nice, tidy grey T-shirt with a beard, and he's holding an award. A man who had spent most of his adulthood in and out of jail has now turned his life around and is helping others to do the same. During his 20s, Craig Haler from Hampshire spent time in prisons in Winchester and Ford near Chichester. But whenever he was released, he was told no help could be given to him in finding a place to live, as he did not meet the criteria. After years of trying, Craig got support from the Integrated Offender Management team and was subsequently given a place to stay for the remainder of his prison sentence. In this time, he rebuilt his life piece by piece and now works at the Society of St James in Southampton, a charity supporting homeless and vulnerable people with accommodation in both Southampton and Portsmouth. At last week's Police and Crime Commissioner Awards, which took place in Winchester, Craig was given the Simon Hayes Award for outstanding effort in reducing offending and reoffending. Simon presented the award and said, "After completing a successful stay in the Integrated Offending Management House and engaging with Saints for Sport for a number of weeks, Craig started to volunteer for Integrated Offending Management as Life Skills and Activity Coordinator and Peer Mentor. He volunteers 30 hours a week with no pay. He's been an inspiration to others and goes above and beyond to support his clients. He takes clients to the gym, to appointments, supplies advocacy, and also teaches DIY skills such as woodwork, gardening, painting and decorating, and has assisted the residents of the house with landscaping the garden, building a summer house and completely redecorating the whole house. Craig now is fully abstaining from all substances and lives his life crime-free. Receiving the award, Craig said, "Well, first of all, I would like to say thank you for the award. It will only continue to reinforce the work that I and other colleagues do. Continuing my role in the house as a positive peer mentor once I'd settled in was huge for my progress. I thrived on being positive for other residents and engaging them with activities, and having that sense of achievement was great for my self-esteem and confidence. It means a lot in terms of recognition. I was just happy to be nominated, but we do what we do because of what we all get out of it."
Driver escapes serious injury after crash and roll. A driver narrowly escaped serious injuries after he crashed his car through a fence and rolled into the front garden of a house in a village near Winchester. The incident happened in the early hours of Saturday morning in Bishop Sutton near Alsford. According to police, the driver, who provided a positive breath test, was very lucky to have avoided an extremely large tree as he crashed into the front garden of the house. Photos shared by Hampshire Roads Policing Unit showed a black car lying upside down in the front garden of the house. Hampshire Constabulary has been contacted for further information on whether the driver is arrested, and there is a huge picture of the car lying upside down in the dim early morning light in the garden. I feel sorry for the owner of the house who suddenly finds a car lying upside down in your garden.
And here we have Thomas the Tank Engine back on the Watercress line. Thomas the Tank Engine is set to come steaming along, much to the delight of families and children in Hampshire later this month. The popular Thomas and Friends event is returning to the Watercress line for more fun and adventure from May the 28th to June the 5th. Fans of the friendly steam locomotive are invited to climb on board at Ropley Station for a day out with Thomas. Joining Thomas at the station will be soda station sweepers Rusty and Dusty, Diesel and Toad, with Sir Topham Hatt keeping all the activities in order. Three new outdoor entertainment shows will be held each day for all the family to enjoy as Rusty and Dusty invite their friends to join them. Young fans can make special memories by meeting their favourite characters, Sir Topham Hatt, Rusty and Dusty, up close, and there is plenty more fun in store with Thomas and Friends. Watercress Line Acting Managing Director Alison Houghton said, "We are really excited to have the Day Out with Thomas event back. Thomas, Sir Topham Hatt and all your favourite characters will be waiting to welcome you at Ropley Station, and there's a full day of fun and games guaranteed." And of course there's a delightful photo of a little boy looking so excited at a full-size Thomas the Tank Engine. Blue, of course, with steam coming out of his top and a white round face on the front, beaming with black eyes, and the number one in yellow on his side.
Jubilee event to raise funds for Pond Appeal. Plans for the Queen's Platinum Jubilee are well underway in Hairstock, where neighbours and the local primary school have been busy working on a big lunch to celebrate. The lunch, to which all the community and their families are invited, takes place on Sunday, June the 5th from 12 till 4 p.m. There will be music, dancing, stalls, entertainment, a raffle, quiz, wine bar and craft beer tent, along with other games and activities. And the event also provides an excellent opportunity for many different community groups and businesses to come together. And one such group are the children of Hairstock Primary School, whose school pond had fallen into neglect and is no longer safe to use. To help them renovate their pond, all the profits from the Hairstock Jubilee Big Lunch will now go to the school pond renovation appeal. And there's a lovely picture. of a group of children standing in front of a lovely blue fence, a little wooden paling fence, you know, and they're all wearing their school uniform, which is precisely the same shade of blue as the fence. So it's all very happy there.
Life-saving kit is in honour of Chairman. A new defibrillator has been provided by Winchester Social Housing Charity and its Tenants Association. Winchester Working Men's Housing Society has unveiled the defibrillator on Greenhill Road in Full Flood. The installation is to express thanks to Richard Steele for his long service as a committee member and chairman of the society. Current chairman, Robert Luffridge, urges people that in an emergency, if you think someone has heart failure, always call 999 first to summon medical help. The 999 operator will provide a code to unlock the secure cabinet of the defibrillator closest to the caller, and the device is designed for use by anyone in an emergency with clear instructions given. No medical training is needed. Society Chief Executive Sally Moja explains that the device is fully automatic and assesses the heart rhythm of the casualty, so it will never give a shock to anyone who does not need it. The defibrillator is installed outside Richard Bowder Court, with the location chosen, the Society's property manager, Pete Lillywhite, said, for its easy accessibility to anyone living nearby or just passing through. The Save a Life mobile app is available to download and uses GPS to enable users to see the closest defibrillator to them. The new Greenhill Road defibrillator is registered on the app. Essential first aid skills such as CPR and the use of defibrillators are far more widely known following the high-profile sporting cases in which they have been helped to save lives. And there's a picture of the defibrillator on against a wall, and Pete Lillywhite looking very pleased to have it there, Richard Steele and Sally Moja smiling happily to have their new defibrillator on the wall.
And here we have Hampshire Fair Launches Guide. Hampshire Fair, the county food group, have launched the latest edition of their free annual Discover Local Produce Guide, listing where to find the finest local food, drink and craft across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The guide always features a distinctive and colourful front cover, and this year's is a dish specially created by award-winning chef patron Gordon Stott of the Purefoy Preston Candover, using local ingredients provided by Hampshire Fair members. These include asparagus from New Forest Fruit Company, cheese from Liban Farmhouse Cheeses, New Forest, eggs from Vale Farm, Winchester, honey from Becky's Bees, that's with three Z's, Andover, and microherbs from Lusso Leaf, Stockbridge. Tracy Nash, Commercial Manager, Hampshire Fair, said, "We're delighted to be launching our much-anticipated annual Discover Local Produce Guide. This year's edition has a special focus on green issues, with features on eating seasonally, our sustainable seafood project in partnership with Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, and our members' green initiatives. This focus on green issues is in response to the increasing interest in the environment and conscious consumerism. Buying local and eating seasonally have always been two of the more accessible ways for families, foodies and those in the food and drink industry to be greener, and it is an approach that Hampshire Fair has been promoting for 30 years. We're very proud that our guide has become well established as an essential resource for those in the industry, among them chefs and people running delis, farm shops and village stores. However, it is also appreciated by consumers keen to know more about provenance and supporting local independence." And this is accompanied by a photo of a lovely old-fashioned van, which is the launch of the book, and two people sitting on the side of it, reading the book and surrounded by some very definitely delicious-looking local fare.
And now to the protection of delicious local drink. Volunteers rush to light candles to save vines on a cold night. This is about the Grange in Alsford, where they grow grapevines. Volunteers had an early morning wake-up call and rushed to an Orsford vineyard to save the vines after a sudden dip in temperature. The Grange near Itchen Abbas lit hundreds of bogies in the early hours of April 30th after frost set in. Now, I don't know what a bogie is, but looking hard at the photographs, there's a great field and it's almost sort of bluish, so it's very, very, very cold. And then there are these... It's not just ordinary candles, because they make quite a little fire. It looks like some kind of big clay pot or something that they light these in. Anyway, they lit, it says here, hundreds of bogies in the early hours of April the 30th after frost set in. A team of about 8 local people assembled after having been called at 1:30 in the morning, when the temperature dipped to -1 centigrade, and within an hour, 450 candles were alight to keep the vines safe. And Sam Baring, the CEO, said, "It's a stunning sight, but not one I particularly enjoy seeing. These cold spring nights are all about tight judgment calls. How cold is it going to be in an hour's time? It's about tracking clouds on satellite images to work out, are they going to drift in over the vineyard and warm things up? Or will they just disappear like a puff of smoke? If we don't light the candles, how much damage will be done to the buds? And if we do light the candles that night, will we have enough left for what is coming down the line tomorrow night, or the night after, or next week? We budget for about 4 cold nights each year. Any more than that and things start getting very tense. Once the sun comes up and it's warmed above freezing, a different team of snuffers comes out and extinguish the candles to conserve them for another night. And both teams are volunteers. And they do all this for the reward of a bottle of wine."
Book published about historical Winchester. A new book is shedding light on the history of Winchester from the Iron Age to the early post-medieval period. The book, launched at the Ark, that's the new name for the Discovery Centre, describes the natural environment of the city of Winchester and its immediate surroundings, using analysis of documents, historical records and archaeological remains, shows how humanity has interacted with it in fashioning agricultural, gardening and horticultural regimes over the last millennium and a half. A new comprehensive survey of Winchester's past environments shows that from Roman times, the citizens of Winchester had ready supplies of orchard crops, including apples, pears, damsons, plums and cherries, probably grown within the city walls, as well as sloes, nuts and blackberries harvested from the hedgerows. Royal visitors and the bishops also enjoyed grapes and wine and figs. Documentary sources reveal that the bishops of Winchester had vineyards from the 13th century onwards. They were so plentiful in the south side of the city that a church there was named All Saints in the Vines. These studies also show that whilst in early Roman times bread was made from spelt from the later Roman period, it seems bread wheat, similar to what we use today, was probably threshed and initially processed at farms such as that found at Oslebury, where evidence of these activities have been found. By the 13th century, at least 9 watermills were operating for general use in Winchester, as well as individual ones supplying the bishop's palace at Wolvesey and the cathedral monastery. Records show corn came for the milling from Andover, Abington, Barton Stacey, Baybridge near Oslebury, Botley, Clatford, Crawley, East Meon, Hurstbourne, Kingsworthy, Nerdon, Overton, Stockbridge and Winnall. Winchester's participation in the international trading networks of the Roman Empire is demonstrated by the presence of a range of exotic plants, including the Mediterranean stone pine, which may well have been imported specially to be burnt as part of Roman temple rituals. Amongst the human waste found in the medieval deposits in the Brook Street were 2 peach stones, which were most likely to have been imported at this period. Documentary sources reveal that as well as those at the castle, there were extensive gardens at the bishop's palace at Wolsey, where fruit and vegetables were grown on a considerable scale and sold for cash under the direction of a gardener, who in the 1290s had an annual salary of £3.15 and 10p. Excavations at the site revealed a feature which does not appear to be in the documentary record, but seems to have been a raised garden from where the first Norman bishop, William Gifford, 1109 to 29, could admire the building of the current cathedral. As well as reviewing a range of documentary evidence, Winchester Studies 10, Environment and Agricultural of Early Winchester, edited by Professor Martin Biddle, Lady Jane Renfrew and Dr. Patrick Otway, analyses seeds, pollen grains, plants, mosses, wood and insects preserved from waterlogged sites across the city, as well as deposits of preserved grains carbonised accidentally. An analysis of such carbonised grains in the moulds used to cast bells in the medieval period revealed that the clay was strengthened by the inclusion of horse manure, shown in by the presence of oats and chaff, which was regularly fed to horses at this time.
And now, writer co-authors acclaimed novel with Spy Hunter. Winchester writer and national newspaper journalist David Derbyshire has co-authored a debut novel with his childhood friend Sir Mark Rowley, the former Assistant Commissioner for Specialist Operations in the Metropolitan Police. The debut, The Sleep of Reason, is a tense, compelling thriller that explores the toxic world of counter-terrorism, extremist ideology and populist politicians. It draws on the real-life experience of Sir Mark, who led the UK's counter-terrorism policing from 2014 to 18, during which time the police prevented 27 Islamist and extreme right-wing plots and made 850 preventative interventions to combat radicalisation. David, who lives in Winchester with his family, is an award-winning journalist who previously worked for the Daily Telegraph and Daily Mail and who has written a host of publications as a freelance writer, including The Guardian, The Sunday Times and The Times. The Sleep of Reason has won rave reviews since it was published by Legend Press last month. David, 53, said, "It's been an absolute joy writing with Mark, a friend since we were teenagers. His inside knowledge of policing, counter-terrorism and the workings of government is vast, and we've been able to draw on that to create a political thriller that's not just exciting, but also authentic. And while this is Detective Sophie Gabriel's story, it goes wider than the police and explores how extremists recruit and groom vulnerable young people, and how populist politicians from across the political spectrum can fuel extremism. One of the challenges was keeping the story plausible while also being gripping. At the same time, we wanted to reflect the messiness and frustration of real-life police work." Sir Mark, 57, said, "I've always loved thrillers with a twist, so when David proposed we created a novel together during a birthday celebration at the Guildhall in Winchester a few years ago, I jumped at the chance. This is completely different from anything I've ever done before. We set out to create a story that's exciting and thought-provoking, but also one that's as realistic as we could make it. Sophie Gabriel's story isn't just a tense thriller. It sheds light on how neo-Nazi and Islamist terrorists and extremists operate and feed off each other in the UK, and highlights the immense challenges police face keeping the public safe."
Watercress Festival is going to return to Alsford. A popular food festival that celebrates watercress is to return after 3 years' pause, with celebrity chefs, live cooking demonstrations and the World Watercress Eating Championships. The Alsford Watercress Festival, which is a not-for-profit enterprise, is due to return on Sunday, May the 15th, with a packed schedule, including celebrity chefs such as TV's Leslie Waters and MasterChef's Shalina Permalou, who will show the public how to get creative with watercress. Leslie is well known for her regular television appearances on Ready Steady Cook and This Morning. She has also run her own cookery school in Dorset for the last 15 years, becoming a published cookbook author and enjoying her role as ambassador for Teflon. Shalina is a successful cookbook author, and after winning MasterChef in 2012, she's been gracing our screens on This Morning. Since her first place win, she opened her first restaurant in April 2016, the hugely popular La Case Maman in Bedford Place, Southampton. A spokesperson for the festival said, "Like previous festivals, all the classic elements will be there. The dispensing of the freshly harvested watercress, the crowd, more than 140 stalls groaning with local food and crafts, musical performances and entertainment for the kids. You also can't forget the World Watercress Eating Championships, where Glenn Walsh will fight to retain his crown for the 14th consecutive year." And there is a picture of Glenn Walsh, dark glasses on, arms upraised, watercress gripped in both fists, watercress decorating his head, and a huge amount of watercress coming out of his mouth. The day starts at 10:30 a.m. with music from Alsford Ukulele Jam and finishes with the World Watercress Eating Championship at 3:30. There'll also be a host of children's entertainments such as circus workshops, puppet shows and birds of prey displays throughout the day. There's a competition in honour of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee called Create a Dish Fit for the Queen. This competition will allow one person to win a YETI roadie worth £200, filled with freshly harvested watercress and a hamper of fresh produce, while second and third places will win Hampshire Farmers Market goodies. To be in with a chance to win, people are asked to create a recipe suitable for a celebration picnic, which could serve four people. And the rules are that only a maximum of seven ingredients can be used, including watercress. The three finalists will be invited to bring their prepared dishes to the festival, where they will be joined on stage for the final tasting by the Mayor of Winchester and the celebrity chefs. There is no entrance charge with the event on the streets of Alsford.
Mum fighting eviction of disabled daughter. A Winchester woman with complex care needs is facing eviction from her home of 20 years. Emma Lamb, 42, who suffers from conditions including epilepsy, mobility problems and learning difficulties, moved into her specially adapted home in Highcliffe over 2 decades ago and lives there with her full-time carer and beloved cat of 18 years, Nala. She had previously shared the property with another lady who moved out in 2018. But since the pandemic hit, the authorities have been subsidising her spare bedroom. However, as restrictions have started to ease, social housing provider A2 Dominion has now said it needs the 3-bedroom property back to deal with the current housing crisis, with Executive Director Michael Rees stating there is an unprecedented number of families are in need of a home. A2 Dominion wrote to Emma's family in January, explaining they were unable to find a suitable tenant to live with her and her carer. The family say all they've been told since is that Emma will be served an eviction notice in June, despite Emma being left in the dark as to where she'd be moved to. Her mum, Anne Marie, said Emma lives a quiet life. She sits at home and watches television and doesn't bother anybody. She's got a lovely neighbour who looks out for her. All she wants is to be in her home with Nala, so why can't social services find a solution? Why can't they keep looking for someone to move in with Emma? And until then, just pay the money. Social services have a duty of care to my daughter, and they're failing her. For 35 years, I've been fighting for everything Emma has, and now they want to take away her home of 20 years. It all comes down to money, and my daughter is just piggy in the middle. Ms. Lamb said the only alternative property which has been suggested to the family isn't suitable for Emma's needs. She says she's tried to arrange a meeting with social services to work out a solution, but has been continually told they're too busy. Why can't they find Emma a 2-bed house where she can live out her life if they want her out, she said. The least she deserves is a quiet life with everything she's been through. Social services have put her through so much trauma, the support over the last 3 years has been non-existent. Michael Rees, executive director of A2 Dominion, said, "It's unfortunately no longer sustainable for us to rent out a three-bedroom property to a single tenant. We're supporting Hampshire County Council and Ms. Lamb's current support provider to find her a new home that meets her needs, and we will continue to do so, with eviction being something we would only pursue at a last resort. We appreciate this is a difficult situation and would like to apologise for any stress this may have caused her and her family." An eviction date has not been set, but Ms. Lamb said the family would go to court if they needed to. She said the situation has caused Emma to have anxiety-induced seizures, which she fears could yet worsen. She said Emma is just a figure on a sheet costing them money, and they don't care about her life. "Any seizure could kill my daughter, and I just live in fear that this goes on and on, and I'll get a call one day, and that will have happened." Emma rings me up screaming on the phone, saying, "It's not my fault, I don't want to leave Nala. We need to do something, not just for Emma, but to stop this happening to some other poor family." A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "Any decision to provide an eviction notice is not taken by the County Council, but by the social housing landlord. We understand that change can be difficult for our care clients, whose accommodation arrangements are changing, and we therefore do all we can to work with all the parties involved to try to identify appropriate alternatives. This will often involve the relevant district or borough council, which holds the statutory responsibility for housing. We will continue to offer our support to explore potential options and hope that a satisfactory resolution can be found in the near future."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd and Sean Burrows. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.